Procrastination is not taking action on the things that you know to yourself you should be taking action on, the things you love. It's postponing for another day. Some people procrastinate on being happy. They say, okay, when I get a bonus from my job, I'll be happy. When I get married, or when I get a divorce, or when this happens, or when that thing happens, then I'll be happy, or I'll feel better. So it's not just putting aside your dreams that's an issue. It's also putting aside your happiness and waiting for a moment in time, as opposed to enjoying each moment or living each moment. So even though there are times when I might have crappy moments, I actually try my best to live them and to enjoy them. Enjoyment could mean different things. Like, I'm not going to put it off and say, you know what, I feel crappy now, so let me not do A, or let me not do B. You go, okay, I feel crappy. Maybe A may change my vibration. Maybe B may change my vibration, something like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's not just putting off an action, it's putting off a feeling.
Yes.
Okay, Lynn Thompson with Darian Tuitt. Darian's in Ottawa. I'm in Newmarket, Ontario, Canada, here on Friday, February 5th, 2021. This is our third out of four talks about your book, Life Success Hacks.
Yes, today the fun sections. It falls. Yeah. This is where people sometimes get tripped up. They're coasting towards their dream and they're like, oh, this is going well. And then some pitfalls. And then, you know, this is where they need to know how they can handle some of these things.
Briefly recap, we've got section one that we talked about, the tools, which are trust and faith, the wonder twins, focus, the game changer, teachability, the true indicator, and mentorship, the blueprint. And I worked alongside you with your book, helping you fine tune it to publish there a couple of years ago. Very exciting.
Yeah, actually, it was a very lovely experience for me. I learned a lot about editing. I didn't know it was so much work. And I thought I had done lots of work. And then I'm like, oh my God, there's so much more to go.
And then we serendipitously met, just over 3 years ago in Ottawa on a snowy night, at the end of January. Yeah. It was like the 29th or 30th or something.
Yeah, around that time, yeah.
And then section two, which we talked about, is the accelerators, which are very exciting. Appreciation, the catalyst, giving, the generator of riches, and forgiveness, the liberator.
Yes.
Good to go into section three to have a little bit of tempering with the pitfalls.
Yes. So
do you want me to list them and then we can bounce around?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So we've got fear, which you call the deadly poison. There's different kinds of fear. And mm-hmm. then excuses, the disease of the mind. Procrastination, the master thief. Relationships, the litmus test. And finally, money, the falsely accused.
Yes.
So where do you want to start?
We can start anywhere you want to start. It doesn't have to be in order.
Yeah, okay. Well, I was just remembering about excuses today. I looked up this great quote, "Don't ruin an apology with an excuse." And that's by Benjamin Franklin.
I think I heard that one. Yeah, I think so. I think I read it somewhere too. From my experiences of coaching people, talking to them on a day-to-day basis, we have lots of alibis. We always come up with reasons why we can't do something. And most times we're not even cognizant of what we're saying and what we're implying. So for instance, one of the excuses that I hear people make is they say, well, I can't do this because I have a family or I have children. That's the thing about excuses, right? On the surface, they sound plausible. They sound wonderful. They sound valid. When you dig a little deeper, you realize it's kind of cop out. So let's take the excuse of, I can't do something because I have kids or young kids. My reaction to that is, don't I want to be someone that my kids look up to say, okay, look at my dad, you know, he has all these reasons for not being able to do this. He has us. He's still doing it. And he's inspiring us to want to go after our dreams. Inadvertently, when you're saying you can't do something because of your kids, you're really blaming them for you being in a position that you are in. It's not fair to them. It's not a fair assessment to pass on responsibilities to people when something is clearly you're doing. I've also heard people say to me, I don't have enough money to do something. Meanwhile, when you look at lifestyle and you look at choices that are being made by those individuals, then you see, you know, what if you rearrange some stuff? What if you reprioritize some stuff? It's not to down anyone or knock anyone. It's just to be very frank. If we really look around, there's lots of inventory that we could be utilizing. And I also think we are not fulfilling our true and vast potential. We're not even scratching the surface where that is concerned. We're settling. And excuses help you to settle.
Yeah, for sure. And at the end of each chapter, you have some action exercises in that section around excuses. You can learn from looking at what your default excuses are, what you just automatically think of. Because with anything that we automatically think or say, there's a lot to be mined in that. Check it out.
I agree with that, because sometimes we're living other people's excuses. And that's why I said, ask where these excuses are coming from. Where did they originate? Because there are times in your life, in my life, when I might say, I'm not good at that, or I can't do that. And then I realize I'm living my upbringing. I've heard that many times.
What is it?
I'm living my upbringing, where it's like I've heard that so many times. And I've learned to realize that, listen, not because someone else feels that they cannot do something, mean you have to embrace that thought. And not only embrace it, but consume yourself with it to the point where you're limited by your excuses, your alibis. Because the same excuses that person A could give for not wanting to do something are the same reasons that person B could use for doing that very same thing. So someone may say, I can't take that course because I have kids and I have to be there for them. Another person may say, I need to take that course because I have kids and I need to provide for them.
Right.
And this course is going to help me to provide for them. I always say, flip it. Flip whatever you're thinking as an excuse. And I hear this a lot. I'm too old. And I'm like, really? What do you mean you're too old? Because to me, if you're breathing, you can make a contribution. It's not too late to make a contribution. And history is rife with examples of people who have made contributions in the latter, what we term the latter stages of their lives. I would say you're even more qualified then because you've accumulated experiences that other people would not have had yet. And it doesn't mean that experience comes from just age, but it means you would have seen a more number of things, let's say.
It's remarkable what people can accomplish. And I agree that as long as we're here, there's still something for us to accomplish and contribute and demonstrate. You know, there's so much. So speaking of why we might not want to do those things that we could do, what's procrastination all about in your mind? Because you definitely include that as one of the pitfalls, Darian.
So I define procrastination as something that inside of you innately, you know you should be doing. You talk about it to others, to yourself. It's something that you're always thinking about, but you never get around to doing anything about it. It starts becoming a point where it's making you sick and you put it off. You say, tomorrow I will do this. Next week I will do it. And it never happens. And it's usually something that is going to literally change your life. And part of the procrastination, in my opinion, is it comes with a certain amount of fear. What if I fail? And so procrastination is not taking action on the things that you know to yourself you should be taking action on, the things you love. It's postponing for another day. Some people procrastinate on being happy. They say, okay, when I get a bonus from my job, I'll be happy. When I get married, or when I get a divorce, or when this happens, or when that thing happens, then I'll be happy, or I'll feel better. And so it's not just putting aside your dreams that's an issue. It's also putting aside your happiness and waiting for a moment in time, as opposed to enjoying each moment or living each moment. So even though there are times when I might have crappy moments, I actually try my best to live them and to enjoy them. Enjoyment could mean different things. Like, I'm not going to put it off and say, you know what, I feel crappy now, so let me not do A or let me not do B. I go, okay, I feel crappy. Maybe A may change my vibration. Maybe B may change my vibration, something like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's not just putting off an action. It's putting off a feeling.
Yes.
Making it dependent on some nebulous factor. I wonder if you'd like to talk about money as a pitfall. We could think about ways that it's a pitfall in sort of normal ways. But one of the things you mentioned in your action steps for money is to listen to yourself in how you talk about it.
Yeah. So this chapter was a controversial chapter for me. I was not going to include it, actually, because I didn't know what the feelings around it, other people's views, because you hear all this time, you know, the love of money is the root of all evil. And I don't know about anyone else, but if I was money, I would literally stay away if I'm going to be blamed for a lot of things that's happening in and around people's environments. So money is a tool that we could use. It has energy. What energy we assign to it is actually makes the difference. So if you see money as evil, why would it show up in your life freely and flowing all the time? Because I would not want to show up where I'm being blamed, right? And I think in the book, I said, think about someone that you're courting. If you're going to court someone and you keep telling them, you're this way, you're that way, and everything is negative, like, they're not going to want to, sane person would want to marry you, right? And I think it's the same with money. When I say to people, you got to love money, they look at me strangely. I'm like, yeah, you got to love it. Like, I'm sure you love your car. I'm sure you love your home. It gets you from point A to point B, your car, and your home provides a nice little warm and shelter. So why is it wrong to love money? Or why is it taboo to love money? Just as I love my arm and everything else and fresh air, I love money. Anything that can advance what I want to do in a constructive and creative way, I'm going to be in love with it. For instance, I love children, and money helps me to have impact on kids' lives by supporting them through school in different countries, by helping, you know, them with surgeries and stuff like that that would not be readily afforded by their parents because of whatever factors and circumstances. And so when I look at money from that point of view, how could I not love it? So I gladly say, just like I love lots of other things, I love money. I just don't let it control me. Because I think money is a good, quote unquote, slave, but it's not a good master. It's a good worker. Let's use that word. It's a good worker. It works well.
Yeah, good worker, yeah.
Yeah, let's use that word. It works well, but it's not a good master if you allow it to dictate and direct your life. Because at the end of the day, you know, I just think money provides more options in dealing with some rather challenging issues.
So it can be a pitfall then, because maybe a person's ambiguous about the role of money.
Yes, it could be a pitfall two ways. One, if you're worshiping it and think it's the end all and be all. Or two, you absolutely despise it and think it is just dirty and it is just evil. Either which way, you're defeating the flow of money in your life.
Yeah, it's important to evaluate the role of it.
And the reason why I call it the false accuse, the mindset at the time was, I've come across people blaming other people and say, it's because they have money why they're behaving like this. And money is a magnifier. It doesn't determine who you are. You're already that person based on your actions and habits. Money just magnified. So if you were a kind person without money, when money starts flowing abundantly in your life, you will be even more kind. If you were a person who was just disagreeable or just mean about everything, money's going to magnify that too. And it segues into another thing about giving. And I know we dealt with this in the last podcast, but I also hear people say, well, when I have more money, I'll start giving. And I'm saying, no, it doesn't work like that. You should start giving now. Just give whatever it is you could give, just give. And you will be blessed with more. And as you get more, you can give more. But everything is like practice. And I'm an athlete, right? So you just don't get up today and go, say, I'm becoming a skilled basketball or soccer player. You have to put in work and time and energy, right? So I don't understand why we think, yeah, if we come into a whirlwind of money, we're just going to start giving tomorrow. No. My experience has been that's not what we do.
It's a good point that you need to practice. It's a practice thing. Yeah.
Yep. I think everything in life becomes easier the more you start doing it. And that's why the so-called bad habits are so prevalent, right? They're easy to do. And the more we do them, we're developing this groove in the record. So it spins and it spins and it spins. And so my take is, it always brings me back to anything that you want to do, anything that you're going to do, it takes practice. And sometimes, you know, different people have different appetites for different things. So sometimes some of us take smaller steps. Some of us may take ginormous steps, but at least we're practicing.
Yeah. I heard a great quote one time, don't know who by, that bad habits are like a comfy couch, easy to fall into, hard to get out of.
Whoever said those words? Wise person. Wise person. Yep.
Okay. And why do you call relationships the litmus test?
So I call it the litmus test because this is going to determine if you stay the course or not in going after whatever goals or dreams you have. So personal experience. You have this idea in your head that you want to accomplish. You have this dream. So I'll bring it closer to home. One of the things that I always wanted to do was to walk away from my corporate job. I'll call it that. I just felt I could do more in other avenues, right? And so when I started telling family members, they started getting so worried, like, what are you going to do? How are you going to survive? What are you going to eat? And at first I thought, yeah, they really care about me. Until those cares start becoming personal, where they started getting upset at me. And then I realized, oh, wait a minute. Maybe I'm reminding them of why they are not really pursuing the things they want to pursue. And right. So maybe that's a little difficult for them to handle. So what do I do? Do I continue on my path and respect the fact that they're not there with me? Or do I fit in and stay a part of the family, so to speak, even with my friends, or stay a part of that circle? And the reason why I call it the litmus test is because your relationships might be challenged when you decide to pursue your goal or dream. And another thing that I find that people are not willing to talk about is how your spouse, your partner, fits into all of this. Because my philosophy simply goes like this. Your spouse, your partner, could either be your better half or they could make you half of yourself. And here's why I say that. If you have a supporting partner, it's like wind beneath your wings and you want to conquer the world. You feel like you can literally move mountains because you're getting that support. You're getting that. That's your biggest cheerleader. But if you have individuals in your life that just questions everything, think that, okay, wait a minute, you're rocking the boat. Don't go outside the box or don't go outside the comfort zone. You'll become half of yourself because you'd want to please that person and you'd want to settle. Here's what I say about your comfort zone. I'm not too sure how comfortable it is because on the surface, if someone looking in, it looks like you're fine in that comfort zone. And even to yourself, it looks like you're okay. But there's a deep burning, I say, in your bosom, in the pits of your stomach that you just feel uncomfortable. So how comfortable is your comfort zone? And it comes back to are you willing to still take action knowing that your circle or the people that you have all these wonderful relationships with don't support that move? Are you willing to still forge ahead? And so I had lots of resistance. However, one day, these very same people will respect you. And you know why they respect you is because you would have taken the road less traveled, quote unquote, less traveled. And they would admire that because that is something inside of them that they literally would have hoped to have the courage to do. And so I say, if you really want to know how strong your relationships are, pursue your dreams. But all is not lost. All is not lost because along the way, you'll meet new people who are really supportive of what you're trying to do. So I always say there's your family that you know, and there's a new family that you're going to get to know. And just embrace it all. It's part of the journey.
Yeah, and you're not going to meet some of that new family until you're on your journey. And I can see that a big part of it is not procrastinating or having excuses or holding other people accountable for you not doing what you can do. And we were talking about excuses, and excuses can also be based on fears, which is one of the other pitfalls.
Mm-hmm.
Fear of ridicule, fear of failure.
I guess fear of ridicule is basically no one wants to be, let's look at it as a boxing match. So you could either be a spectator in the crowd and watching the combatants. And in this case, the combatants are you and your dream. And if you really want to narrow it further, the combatant is just you because you're basically fighting against yourself. So there's these two combatants, right? And I don't know if we fear failing in itself. I think what we do fear is to be laughed at. I think that's the situation. We don't want to be criticized. And even if we're criticized, okay, you could criticize me, but don't laugh at me. The way I look at life is I take all these complex concepts and I break them down to what is the underlying thing that we're trying to avoid here? And it's basically people laughing at after us. And so one of the tricks that I use is to just assume that, going back to the boxing match, like it's 12 rounds. In the first 7 or 8 rounds, they might be laughing after me. So just deal with that from the very beginning. Just tell yourself going into the match that, hey, I'm going to be laughed at. But then the later rounds, because you hung in there enough to know that in the later rounds, things will start turning around for me. Worst case scenario, even if I get knocked out, I'm in the ring. I know I can recover from the punch, but another person who's in the crowd laughing at me, they don't know if they can recover from a punch because they've never gone in the ring to begin with. So those are little tricks that I use to overcome fear. I hear lots of speakers say to their audience, don't be fearful. I don't know if I agree with that. And they say fear is false evidence appearing real, right? Here's why I don't agree with that. It could be false evidence, but if it's appearing real to you, then it's real because it's preventing you from doing something. So it's real, whether it's perception or reality, it's real. Let's call it real. So what I say instead is, fear is a part of the journey. Anytime you're going to do something new, you're going to be fearful. You've never ventured out into that field before or on that path before. So I said, embrace the fear. Let it be a guide for you. Let it assist you. So here's one of the things that I fear. I fear not fulfilling my potential. I fear being on this planet. And I know I can have such positive impact on lots of people, or even if it's one person. And I fear that I would never put a foot forward to have that impact on that individual just because I'm back here like a little lamb just sitting on a stool going, where do I go from here? You know? So use your fears to propel you for greater things. I don't view life in a way that I look at things as just obstacles. I think they're actually there. They're tools to help you. You just got to transmute it. You got to flip it. You got to switch it. So sometimes when I feel like people are going to laugh at me, I just start laughing at myself. And, you know, it's not so bad, you know. And it doesn't make me feel less fearful. It makes me feel like I still want to take more action. So I don't ever want anyone to get the impression that I'm saying, don't be fearful or the fear will go away. You will always be fearful of something.
It can paralyze you at times, but like you say, action is the antidote, really. And that's the subtitle of your book, Life Success Hacks, How to Use Simple Action to Achieve Anything You Imagine.
And you know what? That title, you had a big hand to do with that title, because I was struggling with a title. I did not know. I had some of it. But then the simple action, I thought, was the bridge that made it. Because you want people to understand as well, they're simple action, actually. They're not difficult to do, or they're not difficult to grasp or understand. It's when you bring the emotion into it, they might be a little challenging to get done. You talk about fear as being paralyzing. Yeah, I agree with that, because think about it this way too. Sometimes maybe the paralysis is actually good because it allows you to come with a different perspective. So basically what I'm saying is, when you think of it as you're cooking this pot of soup and you're just throwing in things, in the end, all things are good. So even when you're paralyzed, use that time to say, okay, what am I missing here? Maybe it's nature's way of saying, okay, hold a minute. Yes, you have a great idea here. It is a great idea. There might be some holes that you're not seeing. So patch these holes up, or dig a little deeper, think a little bit more. And so, but to stop altogether and to quit, that's the biggest disservice a person could do to themselves, like just to quit and to say, I'm not going to do this. Again, another segue, all with taking action. In the motivational, inspirational speaking space, a lot of times people are taught not to use the word try. They're saying, don't try, do. But sometimes trying is all you have. So we attach this negative connotation to trying, so then people give up altogether. Well, I say no, keep trying. Keep trying until you can do.
I think the reason they say that is because if you're trying it, you're actually doing it. But in your mind, you think you're just practicing or something, or practicing before you do it. There's usually action involved. Hey, with procrastination, I wanted to just give it a little bit of a thumbs up in terms of how procrastination sometimes is a label put on a process that doesn't look the same for everybody. Because like sometimes I feel like I'm procrastinating. I was procrastinating updating that list. It took me weeks to get to it, and I finally did it today. Now, I don't know why it took me that long. Was I prioritizing? Like maybe there's different ways that we come around doing things, and it's not like they're just ignored, but sometimes we need to respect our process, I think. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I could see that. I think procrastination is an individual thing, and it's within you. Like only you could know if you're procrastinating, right?
Well, sometimes people will point out, like, we're going to do that a long
time. Oh, well, yeah, okay, yes, I didn't think of that. That's true, you're right about that. But that comes back to do what you said you were going to do when you said you were going to do it.
Yes.
So if that's the case, then yes, you're procrastinating. All of life, in my opinion, is energy. And there are times when the energy surrounding a particular action or series of action is just not at the level that you would have liked for it to be, for whatever reason. And so you may put off that thing, but what if you're getting other things done? I work by this principle. I usually go by what is more beneficial for me. What are the one or two steps during my day or tasks during my day that is going to give me maximum results, the maximum results of what I'm hoping to achieve? Those are the things that I start with. So I always say, I eat the frog early. I don't wait until last. I eat it first, because once I ate that frog, so I'm usually up at 3:30 in the morning, and I do the hardest task first. Because even if I don't fully accomplish everything about it, it builds momentum where I feel like, hey, wait a minute, you know, you had this task and you really didn't want to do it. You got 80% of it done, or even 60. And hey, this is a nice springboard to something else, which provides more energy. And then I'm back to this task, right? I try my best not to have it going on and on and on and on schedule and saying, okay, tomorrow or tomorrow or tomorrow. I don't do that, because tomorrow is the busiest day of the year, right? It's always tomorrow.
Yeah, right. And you make such a good point about the momentum. I totally agree. And I've noticed that too. And I've encouraged, you know, that idea too, because if there's something that seems too big, if you even do something little in that direction, it builds that momentum and it gives you the confidence that, well, yeah, what's the big deal? I can do this. I don't know why I waited so long.
You know what I find amazing, Lynn? As a speaker, we always say, after I motivate them or motivate my audience, they'll be ready to act. I think we have it backwards. I think, and here's where I'm going with this. What I've been realizing is act first, and then you get a little bit of success. And it's that little bit of success that motivates you to take more action and more series of actions, right? So I don't know if it's just okay to say, I need to be motivated in order to do something. I say, no, act, and then you'll get motivated to continue or to finish whatever you're doing and to go to other levels of acting, right? So I think sometimes we need to flip things the other way, as opposed to the way we have always seen it.
Okay, so when you're a speaker and in that position, then rather than just thinking you'll inspire them to action, you ask them to perform an action while you're all together, right? And then that is what sparks.
That's what the energy shifts, everything changes, and it's going back to that word momentum. Momentum happens, and then all of a sudden people are like, yeah, I could do this. I just did a portion of it.
Exactly. Okay, so Darian, perhaps we can wrap up this part of our third session before our final fourth session on your book. Perhaps you can give us a simple action today to inspire us.
What I would recommend for today is to try something different outside your norm, something that you've always wanted to do, but was always a bit timid to do it. And it doesn't have to be some grand thing. I'm not asking anyone to go bungee jumping here, like, or to jump out of a plane. It could be something very simple. It could be you thought of a friend and you've always wanted to drop that person a handwritten note. You never know what could be sparked from that, right? So that is what a simple action I would leave with the audience. Do something that is going to, A, take you out of your comfort zone, or be a catalyst to make you take further action.
I think it's a good suggestion, because even just imagining doing something that you don't normally do, it wakes you up. It makes you more aware of being alive, to think of sitting down and taking the time and having the confidence to put words to paper, imagining someone far away or even nearby is going to read them. It's good.
So a nice person, a nice lady sent me a birthday card last October, right? I'm looking for some stuff here with some other cards. So birthday card and then some little tidbits, right? So I've decided that I'm taking action and, you know, I need a little pick me up. So what I've started to do, so I'm sure you'd recognize these.
The heart cards.
And I'm sure you'd recognize this. It says, you're amazing, with love and appreciation, right? And then some other words after that. And so I decided to take some paper and I'm starting to create this thing to remind myself.
Nice.
And so I have a photo of me. Yeah, so I'll then be gluing all these things next to the photo. And then this that says you're amazing with love and appreciation is going to go below this.
All right.
And so I said, okay, it instantly made me feel better. And I said, imagine when I show this individual this. So that was a simple action I took yesterday. I started yesterday.
That's great.
And continuing. So at some point, that individual will get to see that card in its entirety.
Nice.
So there is a simple action for you. That was the point of that story.
Right. Well, that's a very nice example. Thank you for showing that to me. And yeah, and I was thinking about action just as we're wrapping up here again. You know how you said you do what you said you would do?
Yes, when you say you would do it.
Yeah. I was just thinking that sometimes part of that step is saying what you're going to do and then doing what you said you would do. And when you said you would do it. And procrastination, I just want to drop this in because I think procrastination can sometimes really sabotage us in a way. It's one thing to put off things that we want to do for ourselves. It's when we put off that follow through with other people, it can really be detrimental because then they get to know that they can't count on us. And that can be really slowing down in the momentum of self-confidence. Like someone thanked me today for my prompt follow through. And I thanked them and I wrote, your kind words are of value to me to hear that. You know, because I think we need to acknowledge how important that is to each other and for ourselves. So
I agree with you. Reliability is very important. When you don't do what you say you would do when you would do it, people cannot rely on you. And you can even take that thought further. On your end, if you don't do what you said you were going to do when you say you were going to do it, it brings in a feeling of guilt, shame. And instead of saying, okay, I told Lynn I was going to get this done by Friday. Now it's Saturday. Now I'm fearful of calling Lynn because I don't know what the reaction is going to be. So instead of being one day late, I'm now back to avoiding. So it could be another month or 6 months later. And the original issue is not even the issue anymore, because guess what? I'm now ashamed to make that phone call or to send that email or to contact.
You just disappeared. And
yeah,
it's just so disrespectful of the other person and unfair to yourself, because.
And that's why I call it the master thief.
Yeah.
Because it steals your time. It steals relationships. It steals your vigor. Momentum is like enthusiasm. When you're enthusiastic, you roll with whatever punches or obstacles or learning, teaching lessons on the journey. If you're lethargic, momentum seizes. And I think procrastination makes you look lethargic. It makes you lazy. It starts to seep in and you become overwhelmed.
Yeah, it erodes the momentum.
Yes. There you go.
There you go.
That was a perfect ending.
Hey, Darian Tewitt in Ottawa, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me, Lynn. I really appreciate it. I appreciate you as well.
Oh, thank you. So we'll talk again soon for part 4.
Yes, looking forward to it.